listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm glad to have with me once again Brent Cook. Brent is well known for his expertise as a geologist. He's highly regarded for his newsletter that he writes, he and his partner, Joe Masmeter, Exploration Insights, and you can learn more about that if you go to explorationinsights.com, explorationinsights.com. You can subscribe there, and I believe the last I talked to Brent, there's a lot of free stuff there, too. There's information about, valuable information about how to invest in exploration stocks, and I think some very valuable information there. So thanks for joining me again, Brent. It's good to have you with me.
Thanks, Jay. Good to be on.
You know, listeners, I would just suggest that people go. You do have a lot of free stuff there on your site, right?
We do. We try and cover general things to do with geology and exploration and investing in the junior sector. And we've written a number of articles that are available free there. And then, you know, then the newsletter as well. You can subscribe there if you like.
Sure. Brent, you know, I wanted to talk to you about Novo Resources today. And quite frankly, given your background as a geologist and an analyst of mining exploration stories and, you know, weather valuations and so forth, I can't think of anyone better than yourself to talk about Novo Resources, which is certainly their discovery project, whatever you want to call it out there in northwestern Australia, is certainly one of the more controversial exploration stories to come along for a while, I would say. I think you'd agree with that, right?
It's very intriguing. I was there, about a month and a half ago or so?
Mm-hmm.
And it was like nothing I'd really seen before. It's very, so far at least, a rather unique deposit and depositional environment.
Yeah. It was certainly Dr. Henning, who heads up Novo, has called it a very unique project. And you've known Dr. Henning for some time. You've been aware of his theories about how and when the Witwaters Rand deposit in South Africa, where a large percentage of gold ever mined has come from. You've been aware of his thoughts along those lines. I'm quite sure he formerly worked with you in writing your newsletter. And, you know, I've heard lots of good things about Dr. Henning. He has a very good reputation among your peers, I believe, and but he's come up with this sort of out-of-the-box thinking about the Witwaters Rand deposit. He's been on the show and talked about it a number of times. But what are your thoughts about Dr. Whitney's theories? And, you know, and they are just theories yet. Clearly, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. But what can you tell our listeners about what you saw and what your thoughts are about his theories when you, you know, about the Purdy's Reward and Comet Well targets that, yeah, that Novo's looking at now?
Yeah, I've known Quinton quite a long time, and he, in my opinion, is one of the best exploration geologists I've run around with. He's got a mind that can take data from all different sources and compile it into something and come up with what I think are generally reasonable concepts as to where to look for a mineral deposit.
Mm-hmm.
He's done that a number of times. And with regards to the Witwaters Rand, South Africa, I've been there a few times, and the pure South African view of it being a placer deposit,
mm-hmm,
just never made sense to me. There are too many things that you could see in the rocks that just did not conform to a placer deposit. The only thing that made sense to me at the time was it had to be some very unique fluids being flushed through these quartz pebble conglomerates.
Mm-hmm.
And then Quinton started talking about his idea that these the gold actually was pulled out of seawater.
Mm-hmm.
As part of the great oxidation event. Prior to about 2.7, 2.8 billion years ago, there was virtually no oxygen in the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And then these very, very primitive algae started photosynthesizing and started changing CO2 into O2 and releasing the oxygen into the atmosphere and sulfur dioxide as well. And that, so that was the initiation of the Great Oxidation Event, which eventually led to us being here on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So Quinton's theory made a lot of sense, and he had a lot of data to back it up. So with regards to the Witwaters run in South Africa, I think his theory is the best I've heard. And bear in mind, this is a over 100-year-old deposit, and geologists still haven't figured it out, so it's still up in the air. But his theory makes sense, right? Bringing that across to the Hamersley Basin in northwest Australia, the Pilbara area where Nova's projects are, it's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the same as the Witwaters Rand, geologically speaking. Now, the genesis of the nuggets and the gold that they're finding on Nova's ground, I don't know how it got there. I honestly don't know. Normally you get a good, you understand how things got there. This time, I really don't. And it's certainly not the same as the Witwaters Rand, because the geology is completely different. But the source of the gold, or genesis of the gold, could be some sort of variant of what Quinton proposed for South Africa. And we don't know that, and it'll take a lot of work.
Right. I think the age of the rocks are similar, perhaps.
We're looking at, yes, exactly. We're looking at a piece of a paleo continent called Ur, it was one of the first continents on Earth. And it's been ripped apart subsequent to that. And there's a piece in India, and there's a piece in West Australia, and then there's a South African one. So it's part of the same continent that's been pulled apart. And the age of the mineralization is pretty close to being the same as the Witwaters Rand. And there, you know, in reality, there's a lot of gold associated with those age rocks of all sorts of different genesis. So it's the same, about the same age, part of the same continent, and it's remarkable that they're finding these nuggets over such a broad area, which is very unusual.
So, Brent, do I understand you to say that it could have been some sort of a precipitation event in both instances, possibly, but you know, subsequent other geological activities took place and made it a completely different kind of a deposit?
That's possible. I mean, like I said, the Witwaters Rand is a very clean, mature quartz pebble conglomerate. By mature, meaning it's been worked and worked and washed and rounded and such. Whereas the rocks that I saw in West Australia were a very immature, primitive conglomerate, where you've got clasts from millimeter up to meter large boulders of granodiorite and, you know, mafic basalt, lavas, tuffs. A whole variety of rocks of all different sizes mixed into what they're calling, for lack of a better term, a conglomerate.
Yeah.
Within that, you've got these gold nuggets.
Huh.
Now, a conglomerate forms within, in general, it's a stream bed, sediments and such. So anyone can walk the stream and see that you've got big rocks and small rocks and sand and silt. So that's what a conglomerate is. But this, what I saw, and I'm looking, you know, I'm like the guy touching one piece of an elephant.
Sure.
One guy touching a piece of an elephant.
Yeah.
That's what it's really like right now.
Yeah.
What I saw was very primitive rock. It almost looked more like a debris flow than a conglomerate. A debris flow being when a whole side of a hillside slumps in into a basin, and you get just chaotic mix of rocks. And somehow the gold was in there. I don't know how the gold got there.
Well, as you say, you know, people haven't figured out the Witwaters Rand origin yet. I mean, I guess geologists are theorizing, and that's a lot of fun for you guys that like to sit around and think about things like this. I suppose smoke a cigar and drink some cognac or something. I don't know, but what do we know and what don't we know at this point in time, Brent? From a practical point of view, those of us who are not into geological theory and you know, the puzzles about how gold got there, how various minerals got there. I mean, what we've been treated to so far is one very small bulk sample that I think scraped just the top few centimeters off of some rocks. An area where they, you know, the metal detectors found numerous gold nuggets, and Quentin has talked about on this show about 8 kilometers where there's been consistent, really, I think, I don't know if I want to put words in his mouth, but gold nuggets found with metal detectors along an 8 kilometer strike length. And then we have this one bulk sample that was, you know, quite exciting, and I think the market got really excited about it. It's over 2 ounces per ton, and it also had some, I guess the major portion of that grade was from nuggets, or at least coarse gold, and then you had, though, something like 7 grams per ton of fine gold in that sample. What can we take away from that, from one sample, though, Brent? It's kind of risky to bet the bank on one sample, isn't it?
Yeah, risky is an understatement, given we've got $1 billion market cap. I mean, the valuation is, in my opinion, way, way beyond what it should be.
Sure.
And we're, the valuation's factoring in a, you know, 10 to 20 million ounce discovery at least.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got, really what we've got is a geologic concept that potentially says we've got tens to even 100 kilometers of mineralized conglomerate scattered across this basin, and Nova owns the vast majority of that ground.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a potential, right?
Mm-hmm.
The conglomerate occurs at the top of basement rock. This mm-hmm. famous basement rock is about 2.9 billion years old.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got the conglomerate. The conglomerate is sort of the remnants of a much thicker sequence of sediments. So we had the basement, we had erosion, we had a deposition of a thick sequence of sediments, volcanic and sedimentary, erosion, deposition of this conglomerate, and then subsequent lava flows on top of this conglomerate.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the real question that has to be answered is, what's the distribution of the gold in this conglomerate? Is it consistent throughout tens of kilometers, or are we really looking at paleo stream beds
mm-hmm.
that were formed during this time? And if, mm-hmm. if it's paleo stream beds, then the odds are that there's going to be large pieces of this conglomerate that don't have any, and then there's going to be stream beds that have it. And
mm-hmm.
we have no idea how this goes, and hopefully the work that Quentin's starting to do right now with the core drilling will give us a sense of what this conglomerate looks like. So what we've got is gold nuggets being picked up with detectors scattered along the Perdis and Common Well, which is 8-10 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and visited other sites that were tens of kilometers away where they're also getting similar sized nuggets.
Hmm.
And I know of, there was like 100 kilometers away where there's reported occurrences of these nuggets. And then there's that one drill hole that CRA drilled,
mm-hmm.
70s, that hit gold at that conglomerate contact, at or near that conglomerate contact. So there's the potential that it's everywhere, but that would be very, very unusual. So I guess the question that has to be answered now is twofold. What's the distribution of these mineralized areas? Is it in stream beds? Is it consistent throughout? And the second question is it just nuggets, or does the matrix, the rock that doesn't ping when you run over it with a gold detector, does it contain very fine gold?
Mm.
And if that's the case, we've got, it ups the grade quite a bit. And they've taken one sample, the bulk sample you referred to, and tried to screen out the nuggets. And in the material that didn't have nuggets, they got, I think, two samples, 7 and 11 grams, which is very good.
Wow. Yeah.
So those are the questions that have to be answered. Is it, what's the distribution, and does the matrix, the fine-grained stuff that doesn't have nuggets, does that carry fine-grained gold?
Yeah, those are just huge unanswered questions at this stage. The big question, the practical one for everybody that's interested in this story that might have put some money into it, is what should we be looking for now, Brent? I suppose, first of all, he's going to start some core drilling, and it's my understanding that is mostly to test for structure, right? To test for the the geometry of these of these conglomerate beds? Is that the purpose of the core?
Yes, I think that's basically it, is to get a sense of the distribution thickness and variations in the conglomerate bed across the wide area. So if there's a stream bed, you can start to map it, or whatever you find, you start to get a concept of what's going on in these rocks.
Do you believe that they will use, that they will be assaying these drill core for possibilities of fine gold?
I don't know what Quentin's got planned.
Okay.
I don't know if he's going to be assaying or not.
Yeah,
I don't know. Because for this type of deposit, you need a large sample.
Right.
And they're going to come in with a much bigger rotary rig to take some bulk samples.
Right.
So the difficulty with these cores, which are, 2 to 3 inches wide, is you're not getting a very good large size sample. So it could be, it's highly skewed and could be very misleading.
Sure. No, I understand that, the nugget effect. But if there's fine gold in the matrix, as you say, then maybe those drill cores would pick it up. I'm just wondering. I didn't know. I don't know.
That's a good point. I mean, I don't know what Quentin's got planned. If it was me, I would probably assay him just because there's more information. You want as much data as you can. So I would cut it in half and assay half of it once I've logged it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just fascinating. I mean, it's so how would you suggest, and I guess you're covering this in your newsletter, Brent?
Yes. After I visited the project, I came back and wrote up my field notes, and we bought the stock in the newsletter. At that point, I felt it was overvalued, but the potential was good. I think we bought around just under $3.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, I sold a third of my position, and my newsletter is about what Joe and I are doing with our money, so we tell you what we're doing.
Sure. Yeah.
So I sold a third of my position, which gives me a cost basis in the order of, I don't know, just under $1, which I'm comfortable with. Now I've taken enough money off the table that I can sit back and relax and let it ride. That's sort of my strategy. Sometimes it's when you're dealing with something that could be massive or could be nothing more than a geologic curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you've really got to hedge your bets on this thing. I've done something similar to that. I figured it was 23% of my position, but I've been in it a lot, probably longer than you have, or at least that you've been writing in your newsletter about it. And I sold 23% to get 60% of my costs back some time ago. And I figured the other day that from its current price, it would have to lose about 95% of its value before I would start losing money cash on cash. So, you know, but I mean, this thing could just, I mean, it's very volatile. I mean, we're going to see a lot of volatility in the stock, I would guess. But the fact that Kirkland Lake has come in with $56 million, and Quentin's statement, I think, about that was, you know, they're giving us $56 million before we've had a single drill hole put down. Pretty amazing.
It is remarkable. And Kirkland Lake has a great deposit in Australia. They've been looking for new things. It's probably a very smart bet on their part. If this works, it catapults them into the major gold producers in the world.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't work, they really haven't lost that much, as they're doing fairly well over there anyway.
Yes.
But I think you're right in that it's a smart move, and to get your cost base down to a point where you can stand the volatility and it still is material if you win. And in regards to the report that I put together after visiting that, if your listeners are interested, I'd be happy to send them a copy of that report. They just need to contact us through our website at explorationinsights.com.
Oh, that's fabulous. That's a great offer. Thank you for that, Brent. I appreciate that. It's explorationinsights.com. They go there, and I guess they just request it. There's a place to request samples.
Well, there's a contact us tab of some sort, and we can send that newsletter to you. And bear in mind that this is before the bulk sample, et cetera. This is just an initial look.
Sure. Well, I mean, I mean, people that can afford your newsletter, I guess the old saying is you get what you pay for, Brent. And I think your letter is more expensive than some, but then you're two geologists, you and Joe both, with lots of experience. provide some very, very valuable information to people. So listeners that are out there maybe, you know, larger scale investors or people that can afford or simply understand the risks and rewards or conscious of that might want to consider subscribing to Brent and Joe's newsletter. That's explorationinsights.com. Anything else you'd like to add, Brent, before we... I mean, I'm looking forward to talking to you about this in the future. Hopefully, as an owner of the stock, there'll be good news. But there could be news that's not all that pleasing to some of us on the long side of this thing. But anything else you'd like to add before we conclude our discussion today?
Yeah, you know, I think this is a fascinating story, and I hope it works. Certainly got a shot, but I think, you know, exploration is a very, very risky business, and it's unusual that something like this works, but it could, and when it does, it's fantastic. And I think anyone that got in at the prices you were talking about this years ago is sitting pretty and in great shape. So all I can say is I hope it works for Quentin's sake and all of our sakes.
Yes, indeed. Well, he's certainly a good guy as far as I'm concerned. You know him better than I do, but he has been so helpful to me. And I might add to my listeners that you, Brent, have also been helpful to me. I remember talking to you about Quentin's project early on, and you gave me your views of it, and I thought it was very, very fair, but it was encouraging to me. And one of the reasons that I stuck with it and one of the reasons that I've done well with it is because of you and Quentin, frankly, because Quentin was always there in the early days to answer questions that I had. And a very nice guy, really good, honest fellow from what I can tell, Brent. And I know you choose your friends carefully. That says a lot about you as well. So thanks so much for being with us, and look forward to doing it again with you and possibly Joe in the future.
Sounds good. Thank you, Jay.
Well, folks, don't go away. You're going to be right back with John Kaiser. He also visited the project down there in Australia. We'll get his ideas about the possibility of a what John likes to refer to as a WITS 2.0. Brent just told us it's not akin, it's not like it, but there could be something very substantial going on. So be right back with John Kaiser.
Novo Resources focuses on the exploration and development of gold projects. Its flagship asset is the Beatons Creek Gold Project in Western Australia, where it is currently upgrading and expanding on its resources to produce an economic study in Q3 2017, followed by construction in Q1 2018. Novo enjoys a strong balance sheet and supportive shareholder support from the likes of Eric Sprott and Newmont Mining. It trades in Canada and the U.S. under the symbols NVO and NSRPF, respectively. A gold rush has begun. Recently, three of the largest gold mining companies announced strategic acquisitions in the Yukon Territories. Ahead of them was a group who had already consolidated the key claims covering the historic Klondike Gold Rush into one company, aptly named Klondike Gold Corp. Led by a team of accomplished geoscientists, the company is steadily advancing exploration to reveal the rich source of all that gold. The hunt for the next major discovery is well underway, and Klondike Gold's shareholders are strategically positioned. Stay ahead of the majors and follow KlondikeGoldCorp.com.